No. Okay. So you first. Let me just make sure. Yeah. You first met Gambetta in Felicani's office sometime in October.
At the end of the year. Yeah. I don't remember exactly now when. I don't remember that.
Yeah. But what was your impression? Was Gambetta publishing Il Pungolo? Do you remember Il Pungolo? The newspaper Il Pungolo?
No, I don't remember that. I hear about that, but exactly, that's not clear in my mind.
What was Gambetta like? You say he was always very argumentative?
He always argued with everybody.
Yeah?
He always have an argument. He always disapproved what you say, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, between him and Fogliani, sometimes I say, oh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Get out of here, right?
How would you define his politics? What was he? Anarchist, anarcho-communist? How would you define him? Syndicalist?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Exactly, it's just, he talked about everything.
What was he doing when you know him? Was he in business at that time? Was he in the tile business?
I don't know what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested to know what he was doing there, because the most of the time, every time I was good for the guy, I was good for the guy maybe two or three times a week for some reason, somebody, you know. And he always was up there.
Hmm.
Always up there.
He was that close a friend of
the guy? I remember. So he was close friend of the guy. And I remember there was a guy over there working at Reffy.
Yeah.
Oh, Reffy was disgusting.
Yeah.
Now, you know, every time he's a little, he did like this to me.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear Gambetta talk about the Sacco Vanzetti case? Was he a good friend of either Sacco or Vanzetti, as far as you know?
Well, I don't know what's the relation between him and Sacco and Vanzetti. I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. I can't tell you anything about that.
Did you? He went down to New York then for a while, right?
That's right.
And then he came back again to Boston.
That's right. And then he left. And
for Los Angeles.
And then I never even know when he left, because when I went over to Filigani one day, I talked with him, and I asked him, I said, I don't think he's better anymore. He said, andato. He said, andato to California, La Florida. I don't remember
mm-hmm.
where he went.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing was way back in
1942.
1942?
Yeah.
And when he left there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
where would you meet Gambetta then? Mostly at Felicani's place?
Oh,
would
yes,
you see him in conferences?
I never see him in any place, except the old Felicani officer.
So he was that close to Felicani then?
Yeah, he was in there one way or night.
Who else would be around beside Gambetta? Who were Gambetta's friends? Do you remember?
It's not clear to me now. No.
Do you remember anything at all? Was it still going on, the Naturalization Club, the one in East Boston?
No.
Did you go to East Boston very much, Maverick Square?
I go to East Boston often, no, once in a while.
To the club, but not to the club there?
No.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about Gambetta's?
Personally?
Yeah. He said that Sacco was guilty and Vanzetti was innocent.
I don't believe what he say.
Yeah.
I don't believe what he say. I don't know why he say that. I don't know. He get no reason to say that.
No reason to say that. Mm-hmm.
That's my
opinion.
Idea about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so surprised
mm-hmm.
when I read that in the Sun, making that
mm-hmm.
news. I say, what's the matter? Did somebody get nuts or somebody get crazy or what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that yet.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear any such stories like that from anybody in Boston? I mean,
no.
Never?
No, I never hear anything else. No. No, that's what I know. I never meet with any police officers except over
at Felicani's
place. We have discussions over there, about mm-hmm. this, about that, but too far away now. I can't remember all exactly what we go on those days. But the only thing you're sure, see. Well, you want my own, I don't like him. I don't like him better.
Mm-hmm.
See, because you can talk with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the impressions I got to compare.
Mm-hmm.
Always is like, oh, damn keeper, this all right, this is all right, this. He says one thing, and then he says another thing. You know what I mean?
Did he always argue with Felicani?
Oh, yes, always.
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 So he didn't impress you with someone who really knew what he was talking about?
No, no. I was just, well, my impression to this is, time I go there, it's getting better. I disgust that. It's just a bad he's doing it. Now, you know, we thought this, maybe talk about something that's, you know, available, you know, and get together or something and this like that, and then this, always you come right in there. Oh, no, this is not good. No, this is going to be like this. No, this is not supposed to be like that. No, that's his way, as far as I remember him better. Everything
remember.
Else is private life. I don't know nothing about his private life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And everything for his house.
Well, I mean, you never heard any of these stories. I know his own family was very upset when they were talking about, you know, his son claims that his father was giving cocaine to Fred Moore and that he had connections. As a matter of fact, you know, it's very funny. I'm not even sure if it's true or not. In the article, it claims that Donnarumma was a member of the mafia.
No, I don't know much about that. No. No.
But you never heard any of that gossip?
No, because, listen, I was going there maybe some night, you know, during the week, and had some day off. I was going to Fulgana. I always go there Saturday and spend an hour, 2 hours, and then, you know, this small time, you see, you can get together, see any other information, you know what I mean? And, and I was just landing in this section of the, you know, the country, see. I was in Quincy and never know nobody. Quincy, I know my friends in Quincy there, Conrad in Quincy, so there was quite a few there. But we just do things over there and we have no connection with Boston or
did clubs. Anybody in Quincy, I mean, that's where both Kawachi used to work in Orchani. Did you ever hear those names? You know, Kawachi.
No.
Orchani?
No.
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 Because a lot of those people must have worked in the Four River works. That was all the big work then. Yeah.
When I was in Quincy, I was plastering.
Over in Quincy, yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, I was just fascinated when I heard that you knew of Gambetta to get what your impression is of him. You know. But you didn't know much of the other group. Joe Emma you met here, too, in Boston then, yeah?
Who?
Joe Emma.
I met him over here, met him in Boston. Matter of fact, I meet all the rest of them almost in the office, filling on the office.
Always
coming on there in and out. And Fabrizio, this companions or some of these companions. That's where I meet those people there.
I wanted to show you. This is a conference. It's the American Italian Historical Association.
Yeah.
That's going to be happening in a couple of weeks.
Oh.
And in it, there's, I'm sure, two things. We're going to have a session on Sacco and Vanzetti. It's Paul Average, who was at the conference in Boston, and Nunzio and myself are going to give, you know, I'm going to talk about Russell's new book.
I see.
And then I'm sure there's another one that will also interest you, and that, is over here, which is on Carlo Tresca.
Maggiore?
Yeah.
Who is he?
Mangione? I don't know. I haven't seen him for a while. I guess he's okay, but I don't see him too often. Once in a while, I've just met him at a conference, that's all. But that's one of the things, you know, that I'm busy. That's why I'm going through the Felicani collection slowly but surely. I also went to see Mr. Longarini, the son, You know, they sold a house in Medford. But we got all of the papers that were in the cellar, you know, the newspapers and what have you, La Notizia, as much as he has. I found in some old papers that Felicani had in his house, not in his office. He had it upstairs in the attic. He had all the old issues of La Notizia during the Sacco Vanzetti case, uh-huh. which are very important, you know. But it's too bad. I think Longarini just threw away the whole file of La Notizia in the 20s.
Threw away.
Yeah. And, you know, because I think that...
What happened to
Guerrero, for instance? I mean, when he came
Javier back... Javier Guerrero died a number of years ago, and I don't know what happened. I don't even know what happened to Maria Luisa or their child or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything. But Frida Kahlo has a niece, Isolda, and a nephew who's now a leading lawyer in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
They probably would know something that they could help you with.
Mm-hmm.
Isolda, I don't know, she's married now.
Did you know that Vidali has a son who lives in Mexico City?
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
Had you interviewed him?
No.
What is he doing? What is he doing?
He works for the government. He has some position. I forgot now.
Really?
His,
my God.
Vidali had a Mexican companion after Tina's death.
Uh-huh.
Had a
Who
son.
Was she?
Isabella, if I remember, was her name. I don't know what her other name was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, Vidali's...
What time is it now?
I have 3:35.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah. And in Trieste again, just several years ago, I went to see Laura Weiss, who is the one who helped Vidali in writing many of his books.
I see.
And
She was German?
No, she was from Trieste, Triestino.
I see.
And she comes from a very literary family. Her uncle had been a friend of James Joyce in Zurich.
I see.
A very cultured woman, and as a matter of fact, it was very striking. It was difficult to imagine how she might have gotten together with someone like Vidali.
I see.
But she had become a communist after the Second World War. She had been apolitical, but had admired the party's role in the fight against
uh-huh.
the Italian party's
yeah.
role against, you know, fascism and what
yeah.
have you.
Carrillo and La Passionaria.
She, as I said, was connected with the Italian
yeah.
party.
Uh-huh.
She admired Vidali tremendously, but of course he was a different kind of man, I'm sure, when he returned to Trieste than he was in his earlier life.
Yeah.
But, and she was the one who gave me, I guess it was Vidali who retained many of Madotti's prints and photographs, and she had just given them to his son, who has brought them all back to Mexico City.
I see. Well, who has them now? He has them there?
Yeah, I think he gave them. He turned them over to...
museum?
Whatever. Not the museum, but the Department of Culture, whatever.
Oh, I see.
Some agency of the Mexican government.
Oh, well, that's good.
Which holds them. But Vidali, of course, in his books, denies these things. As a matter of fact,
well, of
he
course.
Claims that the GPU was after him.
Oh,
and that
God.
The Stalin, he was really among the first anti-Stalinists.
I know, in his book, God.
Yes.
The review of his book, God.
But,
absolutely.
Yes, some of the statements he makes are rather remarkable.
Well, instead of doing just a series of essays, why aren't you doing a book about this?
Well, because I want to do a book on Sacco and Vanzetti first.
Oh, I see.
You know, this, as I say,
well,
has been
course.
Something... peripheral.
You believe that
peripheral.
One of them was guilty and the other wasn't?
No.
You don't?
Well, no.
Everybody says that.
Not everybody says that. That's Francis Russell. I don't say that.
A lot of other people I've seen in print say
well,
it.
Well, we will be having a conference in November, which
Where?
Will deal in Philadelphia.
Do you think they were both guilty?
No. I don't think you can resolve such questions so unequivocally.
You don't think you think they weren't guilty at all?
What I do think is that they were anarchists who were caught by the police. I can...
I know Dospassos and my husband were in jail together in Boston.
Yes, but I can tell you, I mean, unequivocally, that there is not sufficient proof to say either that they were completely, either one of them were either completely guilty or completely innocent.
How
it's
could
a matter
that
of
be?
Speculation.
How could that be? That they're either...
Well, life is complex.
Really?
But, yes. No, France, as a matter of fact, I am here. That's what I'm going to Los Angeles for. Francis Russell's new book is based on a so-called confession by someone called Giovanni Gambera, who's an old
anarchist. Oh, yeah.
And
but he got this from him.
Yeah, but it's a bad piece of work. I can show you. That's my
But he got this verdict from this guy.
Who?
Russell got it from Gambetta.
That's correct. But Gambetta did not leave it in writing, and it's a very problematic statement.
Really?
I sent the letter to the New York Review, but unfortunately they didn't publish it. But it'll come out in this conference.
Right. Russell's book. How many of you are meeting at the conference?
I don't know. It's something that's called... the American-Italian Historical Association.
Where are you meeting?
In Philadelphia.
I see. Will you write me your name and address?
Yes.
And excuse me for a minute, I'll be right back.
Sure.
Okay.
Just to finish up on, is there anything that you might recall that we haven't touched upon about either Tina Madonte or Edward Weston? Did you ever see Edward Weston in the United States after?
No, I did not. But I have seen his son, his oldest son.
Did you ever talk about Tina Madonte with his son?
Yes.
And?
Well, his son, Chang, you know, the oldest son is the only one who isn't a photographer. All the others are photographers, one in black and white and one in color, and they all have exhibits and they're very famous. And the oldest son sold all of the journals, I don't know.
They were in Arizona.
Yeah, in Arizona,
Yes.
Yeah, and his son told me that he just loathed his father. He loathed his father. Because the way his father treated his mother, Flora, he just loathed her.
Well, you know, the one problem with Weston's journals is, particularly with regard to Tina Madonte, they were very heavily edited. I mean, those were the types of the journals that he...
Who edited them?
He did. And then there were...
Oh, Weston himself?
Yes. Destroyed is perhaps a better word, but...
What a shame.
Yes, there's something, of course, that remains, but it's very selective.
I see.
And so I think she's a rather remarkable woman, but it's very difficult to see
Tina?
Her. Yes, but her life...
She's a remarkable woman, she's a femme fatale, but essentially she wasn't very bright.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially.
What kinds of conversations would you have with her?
With Tina, she was a listener.
Mm-hmm.
At all of these tertulias where all these people sat and talked, she listened. And every once in a while she would make a remark or something like that. But I always had a feeling that she was always sort of wanting to be noticed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she just, because she knew that she was very beautiful, very attractive, and she wanted, and I remember when Guadalupe, one of Diego's wives, you know, from this wild, savage, beautiful woman, and she went looking for Diego and didn't find him, and so she went over to Chapingo, and she arrived in Chapingo, and she saw Diego sitting with his arms around Tina. She went home and took a knife and destroyed 17 of Diego's canvases in their house on Miscalco.
Mm.
I mean, those things happened. Tina always wanted to be noticed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the feeling we had.
Mm-hmm. There were a couple of her friends that knew her pretty well, but I noticed you have some letters in your archive, in your husband's archives. For instance, Ernestine Evans.
Ernestine Evans.
You want to hear about her? Well, I know that she, again, was a friend of Carlton Beale's. There are letters, and there was this whole connection.
Ernestine Evans was the wife of Kenneth Durant.
Yes.
Kenneth Durant came from a very wealthy railway family in Pennsylvania, and he was a member of the War Board. So he knew everything. And when Lenin was looking around for people to serve the revolution, he knew how to put in his hat in a hat and pick out the one who knew something. And he found Kenneth Durant and made him the head of TUS. And Kenneth Durant looked around for people whom he could use, and in the party, they recommended that I should be hired because I knew a lot about Latin America. Eugene Lyons, who was with the United Press, they took him away from the United Press.
Would Eugene Lyons, when he was in Moscow, have ever met Tina Madotti? Do you know, do you ever speak to Eugene Lyons?
Well, we knew Eugene Lyons in Moscow. He had trouble with Billy because all people came and they stole Billy from him. He had to go to Berlin and yank her back. And he had, but he wrote Assignment in Utopia, you know, his book. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Eugene Lyons, I think his devotion to Sacco and Vanzetti was superb. And we have always loved Sacco and Vanzetti for people, the kind of people they mm-hmm. were. Mm-hmm. And we always wanted to believe the best of them. Mm-hmm. So when you say that, I find all of that, what you say, quite disturbing. I mean, that
you find what disturbing?
Disturbing that you think that they were sort of railroaded, you know.
Oh yes, I don't think there's, I think that part of it is quite clear. I have all the
really?
Department of Justice records and so forth, and I don't think that there's any question that they
But even Eugene Lyons, even Eugene Lyons thinks that one of them was guilty and the other.
Well, I know, because I talked to him, but he has no proof. What he does is he feels, and I think part of that feeling comes through Fred Moore. And that, again, is a very complicated
story. His conversation with Moore. And
yes. But no one has any hard proof, and there's more hard proof, let me put it this way, on the other side. Neither
really?
Point of view is conclusive at this point.
Really?
Yes, but what's more interesting, what interests me more, is to put it in the context of the movement from which they came, which has always been dismissed. No one has used Italian language sources, neither of two new books, both of which crib rather heavily from those proceedings.
Really?
Yes. All of the information that deals with the anarchist element, much of it is in Italian, and neither
Do you know Michael Confino?
Yes.
He is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Did you meet him when he was giving lectures here?
No.
In Tel Aviv? Do you know him from Tel Aviv?
No, I just know his work.
Well, he's an extraordinary person, and he knows a lot. I've listened to his lectures here when he came,
mm-hmm.
and he was a very close friend of Solomon Schwartz,
mm-hmm.
who was one of his...
I just know because of his work on Natalia Hertz and
yeah.
Nechayev and that sort
of thing. Nechayev was really some character.
Yes.
God!
Mm-hmm. Well, just like Vidali was.
And
sure.
all the others.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Nechayev. I have the chills when I think of Nechayev. Really.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
But
you're going to do a wonderful book on Sacco and Vanzetti.
Well, I hope so.
And also, you must do a book on Vidali and Tina.
Uh-huh. Well,
when will you be
something.
Able to go through all of this material?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've seen enough, of course, that I do want to come back. But
uh-huh.
And this was just really to get a taste of the richness of the Hoover collection.
There's a lot here. There's a great deal.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And
the people here in the archives are very nice people.
Yes, yes. And I do want to also do some work on the anarchist involvement in the Spanish Civil War, but particularly among the foreign brigades, many of the Italian, you know, Garibaldi.
Do you know Bill Herrick, William Herrick?
No, I know by name.
Yeah. But George Essenwine, whom you met.
Yes.
He is one of my closest friends.
Well, he
and he's very interested.
Yes,
and he's very. His whole life is devoted to that.
Yes,
now.
We had a very nice talk, and he is bringing some material, and I think we're going to remain in contact.
Oh, you know, good.
Yes, because we had a very nice.
Is he bringing me some material too for the archives or not? But you're going to send me stuff when you.
Oh yes, I just have to. I only have so much.
I know.
You can see how much
but
I'm
when
carrying.
You get home, if anything occurs to you that you think I can send you, just let me know.
Yes. Well, what and I was hoping perhaps later, I
yeah.
see that you have quite an oral history. I mean, there's 6 tapes or something. I wanted to ask
well,
you.
Well, there's also a TV. I just did
yeah.
a 12-inch
oh,
TV
you?
That you can see. A television.
Yeah.
You can see
well,
it here.
Well, what I do want to finish, as a matter of fact, is
yeah.
Just today I have asked, I did want to look at the correspondence with Eugene Lyons. That's one of the things I did recommend.
Did you look at it?
No, I haven't yet. That's why I just
yeah, good.
Quickly. But What I was hoping is perhaps later, if there would be something that I could do through the mails about listening to the tapes that were made, the oral history.
Well, you'd have to be here.
There's no chance
now,
of having them.
No, the television that I did, you know, my husband lectured at the University of Colorado every summer until he died.
Mm-hmm.
And after his death, I've been lecturing every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody told a man by the name of Garrison Adams, who is the president of TV documentaries in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And he called up and asked, somebody told him that I had an interesting story to tell for television. And he flew in and interviewed me and he said, Ella, I would like to do a TV documentary. And I said, Garrison, I'm not interested. So when I landed in Boulder in June, he called me up and he said, I have just hired 4 people. I paid each specialist $6,000 for 4 days. I paid $24,000 and you're not going to let me down. So I caved in and I spoke for 4 solid days.
Wow.
35 hours on this 12-reel television documentary, which is here.
Oh.
And one day when you come, you can have a look at it.
Okay.
And they're editing it so that it will be out in the spring of next year all over the United States.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Here is the, this is the list that I got in Trieste, but the prints of Tina at the Instituto Nacional di Antropologia and Historia in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they were given. Yes.
Oh.
But,
when are you going to Mexico?
Well, I don't know. I took these 2 weeks to come to California because I think they're the only 2 weeks I have for about a year, so I don't
really
know. Yes.
You work for a living.
Unfortunately.
What do you do?
Well, I'm associated with an orchestra.
Oh, you play?
No, I work as a manager of...
Oh, you do? What fun!
Yeah. Well, I guess you haven't met many musicians.
Not quite. But which orchestra are you working with?
It's called the Prolatte Chamber Orchestra of Boston.
Well, I think that's wonderful.
Yes, but
it's hard work.
No, it's just something.
Do you have a family?
I am married. Yes.
You have children?
No, I don't.
Uh-huh. And is your wife interested in music too?
She is a dancer. She teaches ballet.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
What is her name?
Carolina. Carol. Uh-huh.
And she uses your name?
No, she has her own name.
Please write her name.
Uh-huh.
Carolina. Well, is she Italian?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Were your parents born in Italy?
Yes, they were.
Which part of Italy?
The Abruzzi.
Listen, one of my closest, dearest, wonderful friends from the Abruzzi is Ignazio Siloni.
Oh, yes, I met him. He was.
We knew him with such love.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And everything he has ever written. We knew him in Rome, we knew him in New York. Listen, when he came to New York, he said to us, I have written a novel about Washington Square, and I want you to take me to Washington Square, see if what I wrote was okay. So in Washington Square on Thompson Street, there's an Italian restaurant called Il Gran Ticino. Do you know it?
No, I don't.
3 steps down, right near the arch. And so we took him and Darina to dinner, and then we walked around. He said, it's nothing like the novel that I wrote. And then he paid me one of the greatest compliments. You know what he said? He said, I remind him of all the women of the Abruzzi. I was so thrilled by that, just thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
We just love him because I think he's one of the greatest people we've known, everything he's
mm-hmm.
written, and he sits in my pantheon solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the great poet Leon Felipe and so on. But you know, when I was young, the pantheon was filled with people, and little by little they all left, and
mm-hmm.
I have maybe a dozen left.
Mm-hmm.
And there Ignazio Siloni sits. And Ignazio Siloni, when he was in Parliament, got a telegram from a priest who was dying in the Abruzzi, and it said, I want to spend my last days only with you. And he left Rome, and he went down and sat beside this priest for 12 days, talking, and held his hand. Ignazio Siloni was somebody special.
Yes.
You should be bursting with pride at
being
an Italian.
I admire him. God. Also, co-worker and friend, Nicola Chiaramonte.
Yeah, we knew Chiaramonte here.
Uh-huh.
I found they all both edited Il Tempo.
Tempo Presente.
Yeah. But I found that Chiaramonte was not quite as great a soul as Ignazio Siloni.
Well, I just never, I met Siloni briefly. Of course, he was very close to the anarchists.
I know.
In Rome at that
God
time.
Was
through him.
And he was one of the most extraordinary. I just absolutely worship him.
Uh-huh.
Like I worship Carlo Levi and Primo Levi and all these wonderful Italians.
Wonderful writer. Uh-huh.
God, who have done marvelous things.
Uh-huh.
People who have suffered and with such courage. So you ought to be
Did you know Angelica Balabano?
She was one of our closest friends.
Oh, they were, well,
one
she
of
was
the closest.
Close, very close to the Italians, but she was a very honorable woman.
But you know,
woman.
We know
her.
Whenever we went to Rome for 6 times, we took a room for Angelica to spend a year talking with Angelica. Angelica came from this wealthy family in the Crimea. She was a 16th child. She didn't like the way they talked. And they traveled all around, and she learned 6 languages, and she wrote poetry, bad poetry, in 6 languages. And when Lennon landed at the Finland station, she said, "I'm here to offer my services." And she did. 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, until she saw that rat, Zinoviev, and the others, what they were doing, and she went to Lennon and she said, "I gave you all, this is not my revolution, I want out." And he let her out. But she was really extraordinary, and then John Reed gave, you know, she wrote this Last Days of John Reed, and you know how he died and how he, but she was, and she was here at Hoover for 2 years when she wrote The Life of a Rebel. You know her book, The Life?
Of course. Sure.
But did you ever meet her?
No, just I had many of the old Italians who met her and they revered her.
We would sit on any corner in Rome, and in a minute somebody would come and throw their arms around and say, "Angelica." All over the world, she and Nenny. And Saragat gave her a state funeral, and she asked him to burn her papers, and he burned all her papers.
Did you?
We have 150 of her letters here.
Oh,
people come to work.
I noticed that were.
People come to do her biography here.
Did you? How well did you know Carlo Tresca? Or how well?
Very well. We knew Carlo. He lived around the corner in Brooklyn Heights.
With Margaret.
With Margaret De Silva, that wonderful, he called her my lovely cow because she was big and fat, and they adored each other. And we knew him on Cape Cod, the house that he had on Cape Cod. And when we used to go to his house when he made the meatballs, we would say, "Carlo, your meatballs taste better than anybody else. What do you do?" He said, "I make the meatball, I rub it in my beard, and I rub it in my beard, and I rub it in my beard, and that's what gives." He was wonderful. He was one of the most picturesque figures from Sulmona. He left his wife there, of course. Well, you know all about that.
Yes.
There's nothing I can tell you that you don't know.
No, you can tell me quite a bit.
No, not a bit.
You lived through those periods.
No, but we loved Carlo. Mm-hmm. Carlo was wonderful.
Did you feel, this was just a story that was about that Carlo was killed by Vidali, or did you ever, I mean, who would have mentioned such a thing? Did you ever come across somebody called Gunther Reinhardt? Do you know that there's a rather bizarre book called Crime Without Punishment?
I know, we met Gunther Reinhardt.
What is your impression of him?
We didn't know him very well. How was that book?
Well, in it, he claims that everything was planned, plotted in Mexico City to kill Tresca.
I'm sure.
And the same thing about Madotti, but it's a rather sensationalistic book. I don't know quite.
No, but I'm sure he was responsible. If it wasn't he himself who did it, we often thought it was he who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Maxime Lieber, did you know Maxime Lieber?
Well, I know about him.
About him, because he was connected with Carlton Beale, of course.
Right.
That was another reason.
Yeah.
But at any rate,
you
we've
know so much.
On quite a bit. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I do hope we'll get a chance to continue.
Is she related to Pastore? A Pastore?
With the heads of the country's political parties to try to put together another government. It would be the 48th since the end of World War II. Number 47 fell over the weekend. To outsiders, Italian politics may seem like anarchy. that when Italians think of anarchists, they usually think of the town of Carrara, a center of Italian anarchist thought. Anarchism holds that true freedom is possible only when there is no government or coercive state. In Carrara, a debate raged for years over a monument to the anarchist assassin who killed King Umberto at the turn of the century. Finally, the city council approved it, a local judge okayed it, and soon, as Silvia Poggioli reports, the anarchists will have their statue.
La chiesa era stato signora borghese.
Every year, the anarchists of Carrara hold their annual fundraising festival in a mountain village above the city. Old anarchist songs alternate with Latin American music, and the scent of charcoal-broiled sausages wafts over bookstalls that display anarchist Bibles of the past and present, from Bakunin to Bookchin. For years, the anarchists of Carrara have been planning a monument to one of their heroes, Gaetano Bresci, whose picture dominates the festival grounds. Alfonso Nicolazzi is an anarchist from Carrara.
We took the decision that it was high time to celebrate one of the men that concurred in making history. Making history sometimes for a king means make a war, and a war means the killing of thousands of people. Sometimes for a king it means being killed, and this means the death of one person. So we conclude there is the need to celebrate the killer of a king.
Bresci was a textile worker who emigrated to Paterson, New Jersey, a stronghold of Italian anarchists at the end of the century. At his trial, he said he had returned to Italy to kill the king to avenge the victims of numerous popular uprisings that had been violently repressed by the police. Throughout Italy at the end of the century, there had been widespread revolts against the king's edicts that raised taxes and imposed heavy levies on flour grinding. The most violent repression took place in Milan in 1898 when General Bava Beccaris opened fire with cannons on the crowd protesting the steep increase in the price of bread. 80 were killed and 500 injured. Bresci was sentenced to life imprisonment, but he died in jail under mysterious circumstances 2 years later. He is buried in a special section of the Carrara Cemetery set aside for anarchists, near the tombs of two men who tried to kill Mussolini. For many people in the Europe of the time, afflicted by famine and poverty, Bresci was a popular hero. And even in the United States, funds were raised for his family. But for decades, Italian textbooks portrayed him as a sinister man in a black hat and coat with a bomb in his pocket. 6 years ago, a group of anarchists submitted a proposal to rehabilitate Bresci. 22 counselors voted in favor. But the monument to the regicide stirred controversy. The most vocally opposed is a small minority of Italians still nostalgic for the monarchy, which, tainted by its complicity with fascism, was banished by a popular referendum in 1946. And still today, the would-be king lives in exile. Sergio Boschiero is a leader of the monarchist movement.
I'm fighting against the monument to Bresci for a question of principle. It has nothing to do with the issue monarchy versus republic. I'm opposed for moral reasons. A monument to an assassin cannot be legitimated because it would mean exalting assassination and violence.
Other sectors of public opinion are also perplexed in a country which only recently underwent a decade of violent terrorism. And 2 years ago, magistrates in Carrara opened an investigation to determine whether the decision to erect the monument violated an Italian law against exalting the assassination of the chief of state. The monument had been approved by a large majority of Carrara's leftist municipality, ranging from the centrist Republicans to the socialists and even the communists, the traditional rivals of anarchists. And it is a communist artist who has volunteered to design the monument. Carlo Sergio Signori does not hide his nostalgia for Stalin, the man who ordered the killing of hundreds of anarchists during the Spanish Civil War. But the communist sculptor has his own reasons to celebrate the anarchist Bresci.
I grew up in Milan, and my mother was injured in 1898 when General Bava Beccaris opened fire with cannons against the crowd. For me, it is also a monument to the oppressed, and Bresci was an oppressed man.
Per me anche è un monumento all'umile. Bresci era un umile.
Now the investigating magistrate has dismissed charges against the city councilors for approving the Bresci monument, on the technical grounds that Italy is a republic and therefore a king cannot be its chief of state. but the sculptor fears it will not be easy to carry out the project. He says one of the members of the royal family has told him he will have the monument blown up. And even the anarchists are unhappy with Signori's abstract design. Many say they prefer a realistic representation of a man wielding a revolver, while the sculptor's model for the 10-foot-high monument, to be carved from a 35-ton slab of white Carrara marble, consists of two wings symbolizing freedom, with the brief inscription, however one wants to interpret it, it was an action that changed the course of history.
Spettacolo di gala, la gente manifesta.
If and when completed, like this anarchist song against heartless tyrants, the monument to Brescia will immortalize the man who killed the king. For National Public Radio, this is Silvia Poggioli in Carrara.
Our technical...